Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you Sword and Sandal Cinema Special Edition with Diana Monford and Michael K. Waterman, also known to us as Setna of Kemet. And they'll be revisiting an old classic, both on and off Sword and Sandal Cinema, namely Cleopatra. Greetings and welcome, Sword and Sandal folks.
Hi there.
Hello from my sword and my sandals. I'm wearing sandals.
Very
and this is my favorite movies in the whole world, so thank you for letting us review this, because I'm one of my favorite girls.
I know that. I pass the baton to both of you. Have fun.
Yes,
thank you. Thank
sure.
you. Thank you.
Well, hello
so
there.
So, Setna, tell us about Cleopatra.
Okay. Well, Cleopatra started in 1963. I was 5 years old, and we were, as I was saying to you a while back on the Yellow Brick Road, in Brooklyn at the Paramount Theater, there was a 50-foot by 40-foot wall painted with the poster of Liz Taylor and Richard Burton and Rex Harrison. And I took a look at this gorgeous woman, and I said to my mom and dad, "Who is that?" Father said, "That's Cleopatra." Well, the name struck a chord with me, and I said, "Well, who was she?" And my mother said, "She was a queen of Egypt." My mother had a very heavy Queen's accent. "It was a queen of Egypt." And I said, "Where's Egypt?" And my mom said, "When you get home, we're going to talk about this," because we were going to Greenpoint to pick up my grandparents, my father's parents, to go bring them back home for Thanksgiving. And by the way, that was a very bad snowstorm that year on Thanksgiving. We actually got stuck in the snow. Mm. But so Cleopatra was in my mind already at 5 years old. When I got home, my mother's brother, Uncle Lloyd, was there, and he drew me a pencil sketch of Elizabeth Taylor with a snake crown and with a green, you know, with the beaded wig. And I was in love. My mother was beautiful, but she wasn't Elizabeth Taylor. And it just struck me. And he started taking me to the library and the Metropolitan Museum and the Brooklyn Museum. And I started to learn about this woman, who I found out was a Greek, not an Egyptian. And then I found out about her dynasty, and they were bloody people. And then I wanted to know more about the Egyptians, because they seemed much more kinder and nicer. And I liked their artwork because I understood it. And I know from my past lives that hieroglyphic was made more sense to me than English did. American, our contemporary alphabet meant nothing to me. Hieroglyphic.
Well, wouldn't you say that the film Cleopatra sparked your past life memories?
Very much so, yes. And I remember saying to that my father had a box of cigars called Antony and Cleopatra. And I thought she looked more like what I thought I remembered Cleopatra really looked like, with goldish hair and a little bit chubby, and not as beautiful as Elizabeth Taylor, but beautiful nonetheless. And the name just rang in my head, Cleopatra, Cleopatra. And I wasn't allowed to see the movie yet because, of course, it was rated R, and I was only five. But the more I read, I was voracious. The more I read about the Egyptians, the more I knew that was my people. But so let's – and how did you feel? What did that movie do for you?
Well, it didn't do a lot, I'll tell you. My mother was a writer for 20th Century Fox Movietone here in New York.
Right.
And the movie cost so much because Liz carried on something fierce. She and Richard Burton would go out to lunch and get drunk, and they couldn't shoot in the afternoon, so you had to get her in the morning, especially for close-ups. Her eyes wouldn't focus. Richard Burton beat her up once, and it took 6 weeks for the bruises to heal on her face. On her face.
It was a mess.
And the Movietone News Division went, I believe, out of business shortly thereafter in 1964. And they sold off the back lot to pay for this, at that time, fiasco movie. It changed our lives, but not the way it changed your life. It certainly changed our lives. Let's put it that way.
I'm sorry. Now, if you go to the island of Scorsia, which is in Italy, it's on the Amalfi Coast, I believe, that is where the set of Cleopatra still is. It's a museum. A lot of the statuary and things were used and costumes were used in a lot of other movies. I was talking
to... Well, yeah, Joan Collins wrote that when she did A Fantasy Island and played Cleopatra on that, they used old 1963 Cleopatra costumes on her, yeah.
Yes, they did. And there's actually a scene where Liz, in the movie, is horse, is where they talk about Julius Caesar becoming the consul, dictator for life. And if you listen very carefully, you can tell that's Joan Collins' voice, not Elizabeth Taylor. When she says Sosigenes, it's not Liz Taylor's voice. They were distinct.
How do you like
Collins,
that?
Well, I know a lot of background about the movie, and it's kind of fun, but there were 90 hours of film made for that movie. Someone said it would have been a very interesting miniseries, and that's true. When it was shot originally and brought out, it was, I think it was like 6 hours, and they had an intermission. It's on, if you get a CD of the movie, you'll see it says intermezzo, intermission.
Right, no, I have it. And now, was the Joan Collins dubbing thing done at the time? Because she was also a 20th Century Fox person.
Well, you know, do you know that Joan Collins was cast in the movie? And she
I know, and when Liz almost died, she was this close to playing it. But Liz recovered, much to Joan Collins' regret, and Lizzie and Joan did not get the part. But having already played Nellifer in Land of the Pharaohs, it's fine because she did her Cleopatra turn, and she was great in Land of the Pharaohs, so it's fine.
Beautiful. Do you know who Bachelorette number 3 was? You will believe it.
Marilyn Monroe.
I hate you. Yes, it was Marilyn Monroe. And Marilyn Monroe was doing Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. No, Something's Got to Give. Something's Got to Give.
Right.
And she was tied up, and she was actually doing very well at that time. She wasn't drinking anymore. She wasn't doing drugs. She had her little head on straight. But she was busy, so she couldn't do it. They also asked Vivian Leigh, who had done Caesar and Cleopatra, and by then she was too old.
Yeah, too old. And Marilyn was afraid that, and the studio was afraid, that if Marilyn did Cleopatra, people would think it was like a send-up, a spoof of Cleo, like Carry on Cleo from, that English, Evening Studios. They would think it was a joke, you know.
Hang on, Cleo, you mean. I saw that. That was hysterical. There's also Astrid in Cleopatra. But so this movie, parts of it are accurate. Parts of it, of course, are complete ridiculous. The beginning scene with the war with Caesar, the smoke of Roman flesh is just as bad as, you know, whatever, this is not what I wanted, let that be set down, and Rufio, and they go on and on and on. And they're showing the Roman, you know, what happened with Pompey's army. And then the guy says, and as the Romans were fighting, so the Egyptians were at war with each other. For young King Ptolemy would not have shared the throne with his sister Cleopatra. And he chased her from Alexandria and thought to destroy her. And there's a part that should say utterly, and they cut that out. I don't know why. But I know the script backwards and forwards. And, of course, they show him. And my mom, we saw this. Remember the 4:30 movie on Channel 7?
Sure.
That was where I saw Cleopatra the first time. It was a big deal, 1968.
Yeah.
And we just got our first color TV. Anyway, long, dull story short, they pulled Ptolemy coming out of the palace, and my mother looked at his crown, and she knew what King Tut looked like, and she said, Michael, is he wearing a vacuum cleaner on his head? The costume was terrible. And he had this thing on the top, and my mom said it looked like an ironing board. And
Several costume designers worked on it. Iron Sheriff worked on Liz's clothes, but others worked on the men's costumes and everything. And yeah, it Well, see, what women can get away with, men sometimes can't. Women can look over the top, and it's fine, but we're at that time, people were so used to seeing men in suits that men in that kind of costume elicited laughter, not awe and shock. And recently I read a review of the royal family, the coronation of King Charles, and the reviewer said, did this evoke shock and awe, or is it Halloween at the retirement home? It's difficult for men to impress when wearing what seem to be bizarre costumes.
Well, Rex Harrison had matchstick arms, and he refused to wear short. They didn't wear long sleeves in ancient Egypt, in ancient Rome.
That's medieval costume that he's wearing, and they didn't have tailoring either. So sleeves were not worn, and that is completely 1300s costuming he is wearing, yeah.
Yes, Italian Renaissance costume. And Richard Burton was exactly correctly dressed. Liz Taylor had on some silly crowns, the one that we've talked about earlier where she's sitting there, have you ever seen the Nile? And the crown she's wearing looks like something that a church lady would wear. It was rolls and rolls of little flowers, and it's wiggling and everything. I thought it was
kind
of a gown.
A lot of her hats look like the bathing caps of that time, you know, for when you went into the pool. I know. I don't know if they copied the bathing caps from Liz or Liz copied the bathing caps as her hats, but yeah.
But they totally didn't belong. They were completely wrong for the movie. But she looked, you know, Elizabeth Taylor could have worn a paper bag on her head and she would have been beautiful. The eye makeup,
pneumonia, I'm sure she died. She had a near-death experience and told everyone about it before the term near-death experience had been coined. She died, went up, and Mike Todd was there. He said, honey, it's not your time. Go back. And she did. And decades later, she founded AMFAR, which helped so many AIDS victims. But Lizzie looks a little worse for wear by 1963, you know?
Well, you see, in the beginning of the movie, she doesn't have a tracheotomy scar. When he puts the crown on her head in the throne scene, Rex Harrison, she has now a very healed tracheotomy scar, which she wore that as a badge of courage, she said.
But later she had it fixed and it disappeared, yeah.
Well, yeah, but during the movie she had it, so I just think they couldn't have done anything with it yet. But that was one of the most beautiful scenes. But there was a gigantic falcon behind her, and that didn't look right. And if you look at the scene where she's with, if we're going to get an early start in the morning, and she's running around, you can see how tiny she is. When I met her in 1987, I didn't realize she was probably. They said 5'2". I don't think so. I think she was just 5 foot. And he was 6'4". So you'll never see them standing together. Even in the scene where they're in Alexander the Great's tomb, she's from a distance from him. And when he gets close up to her, I bet she's standing on something.
I'm sure she is. And by the way, for the listeners, Michael was a very well-known and accomplished makeup artist for many years, and actually helped Liz Taylor with her makeup, did her own, but he was allowed to add finishing touches to her makeup. So just in case people want to know that, you know.
She was my idol, and I was petrified to work with her, and I didn't do her makeup. I'm not going to tell people, yes, I did. No, I didn't. She did. But she dumped her pocketbook out on the table. She said, I use this, and I do that. And I said, can I help you? And she said, hand me this and hand me that. And I did work on the brow. I brushed a little bit. I did finish the foundation. She was a little sloppy. I think between you and me, she was a couple of sheets, too. This is 1986. She was 55 years old. And she was still quite beautiful. And that's when she was doing AMFAR and she was getting everything off the ground. And, you know, she came in a little purple, a purple skirt suit, and she had the smoky gray streaks in her hair at that time. Mm-hmm. And she was unbelievably beautiful. I mean, No one around looked as gorgeous as she did. And it was an interesting thing. I didn't get to talk to her much. I was afraid of her. I shouldn't have been, but I was intimidated. I worked with many.
She used things that anyone can use. She used like Maybelline eyebrow pencil and everything, didn't she?
Black velvet, that's right. Black velvet lip pencil, eyebrow pencil. She wore Cherries in the Snow religiously, which is her lipstick, which is Revlon, and it was made for her. And it's a beautiful blue-red. And she wore that always, almost always. In Cleopatra, she didn't. She wore... and she
very
wore
pale shades, yeah. Because A, the Egyptians didn't wear bright lipstick, and B, to balance the eye makeup, which she did herself, because the makeup artist had a back operation and couldn't. And she did a beautiful job. Give her that. She did a magnificent job on that makeup.
But that eyeliner influenced people for 30 years.
Absolutely.
People, well, a modified version, mostly the one where she wore to bed, which was a wing. Not the line or the one with the corners, triangle corners. But the movie visually is beautiful.
Oh, the guy, beautiful, absolutely.
The scene where she arrives in Rome and they have, it's about 10 minutes with that parade. It's nothing like that in movies was ever seen before, and not in color anyway. And it was
magnificent. I've not seen since, I might add. Yeah, it's magnificent.
And she's riding.
And she was terrified that the extras, who were all Italian Catholics, would kill her. And as that was being filmed, instead of hearing, "We hate you, you whore," she heard, "Liz, Liz, we love you, you're great. Oh, Lizzie, you're great." How do you like that?
And
yeah.
She and Richard Burton were almost like icon figures everywhere they went. Nobody was cursing at them except Debbie Reynolds and Billy and that
Eddie Fisher, Eddie Fisher and the Pope, who said she's an erotic vagrant. Ooh.
And, you know, Richard Burton, this was not the first time he's dropped a wife. It was his second, or she was his second wife. It was a, you know, but there was a lot that was wrong with the thing. Okay, Cleopatra actually had, well, now we've discovered 5 children. Originally,
right.
We knew 4, Caesarion by Caesar. And she had Cleopatra Selene, Alexander Helios, and Ptolemy Philadelphus. Now we found there's a girl, and her name is also Selene, I think, or Berenice. She's Cleopatra Berenice, like her sister. And she died, apparently she was young when she died. But she was right after Caesarion, she had this girl. And, you know, we didn't know it.
Now, did Cleopatra kill herself at the age of 38 or what? And was it with an asp?
Well, funny you should ask that. I've written a book, which I'm going to be out soon. It's called The Serpent Wore Two Crowns. And I have another theory, because the woman spoke 8 languages. They say 9. She was known to every dignitary in the world. She was a brilliant chemist. She was a mistress of poisons, and everyone liked her. She had a very good pop, you know, reputation. She wasn't the monster that Elizabeth Taylor created as her. She wasn't the overly. She was a politician, yes, but she wasn't. So, and here's the thing, and in my book you'll see this. When she came to Rome with Caesarion, he wasn't 5 years old. He was probably more like 11. They did all that. They cut everything fast. She stayed in a villa in Tuscany. So did Octavian. And she was 24, I think, and he was about 21. And the funny thing is we found paperwork, and it's in my book, where he calls her auntie because, after all, Caesar adopted him, and she was Caesar's alleged Egyptian wife, or Egyptian harlot, she said, but Egyptian wife.
Your
and
Egyptian whore. Yes, I love the way she says that, yes.
Take your sister to bed and to wed. This is a great scene.
She is so virtuous, she sleeps fully clothed, I hear. I love that,
yeah. The thing is, through research, we've discovered that Octavian Augustus and Cleopatra were friends.
in the film, they're mortal enemies, and she kills herself because of him, yeah.
Well, the whole thing is they knew each other too well, and I don't think it ended that way. And I won't give my book away, but I have another theory about that. And I think when they open her tomb, they're going to find a Roman lady. Or they also say that you might find one of her servants in the tomb rather than her. And I think that's
so she escaped and went somewhere else. Not unlike Elvis Presley and Tom Petty and all the others who supposedly are still alive somewhere, yes.
How about she went to Rome? I won't give it away, but I think she went to Rome. She was too important a political figure to just be killed. It didn't work that way. Yes, Pompey was murdered. Pompey had gotten the Roman people furious. And Mark Antony was a womanizing, drunken...
not too bright either, yeah.
No, very ignorant and very hot-tempered. There was a rumor, of course, and that's how it was in Rome, that he was also one of Caesar's boys. And that's how
Caesar was his boy.
Well, I told you, Cicero had said
that. That was not a pejorative in those days. Until the Judeo-Christian ethic took hold, homosexuality was fine. Do whatever you liked, you know, in Rome.
When in Rome, do what the Romans do. Do something Greek.
Yeah, eat some Italian food, why don't you? But anyway.
Well, there's a joke about that, too. When Caesar's legions were brought to England, to Rome, to wild north of England, before the Hadrian Wall, Claudius and before him Caligula went to go find Caesar's legions, and they ran into a druid, and they asked him how he found Caesar's legions, and he said, "Delicious." So that means they had a cat.
There you go.
That's one of Claudius's commentaries, and it's silly, but it's disgusting, but it's funny. You know, they ate Italian this week.
The 63 Liz Taylor Cleopatra, your favorite Egyptian film?
Yes. Well, two. I don't like Akhenaten and Nefertiti. The movie The Egyptian is also beautiful. And, of course, The Land of the Pharaohs and costumes, they were horrible, but except for Jones. But that was – Cleopatra was, you know, the lavishness, the epicness of the movie just takes you away. And her costume changes. And the men, Cesare de Nova, who plays Apollodorus, who was really the real Cleopatra's lover all her life. Fun fact, Mark Antony's children were really Apollodorus's children.
Especially if he'd had, say, mumps or some illness, that would have rendered him sterile. So, yeah, I'm sure they were.
Well, that and he was very... very often, very anesthetized, shall we say. He liked his Greek wines. So
queens, like Cleopatra, yeah.
Well, yeah, and there's that whole scene in the bathtub where she says, "I will not come to him. I won't quiver like all the other queens who are dying to be with him."
As she plays with her toy boat. Yes, I love that one. Yeah.
It's a beautiful scene. There's so many. The scene where she goes to see, Caesar goes to see her in the bathtub. When she's having a manicure and a pedicure and she's being fanned. Oh, it's you. And he comes into the whole thing and they
that's at the beginning, yeah. And she's almost naked, for God's sake. You see her backside, you see everything.
Francesca Ennis pulls a little sheer cloth over her butt, but you do see everything. And there's a couple of other scenes where you do see everything. Some of them were cut out for TV, but the movie was originally rated R. There was a lot that went on. There's a scene where she's in bed with Richard Burton. Let's make this our beginning. She's wearing a sheer nightgown, and they did something with the camera. You don't see it as much on TV, but people were commenting about her nipples and about her other parts, that you could see them.
And we're almost out of time, I believe.
We have our 5 minutes.
Okay. So, Diana, how can people get in touch with you?
Via Hercules. Just contact Hercules and he'll contact me.
Okay, well, I'm a little different. You can get me at mkwaterman@icloud.com. You can get me on Michael K. Waterman on Facebook, or you can get me at my work, which is Phone a Wizard on Facebook. You can get me on my phone because I have appointments for my amazing Phone a Wizard services. That's 516-650-3691. And you can also get me through our great mentor, Hercules.
And we hope that this will be a continuing feature every month. Setna, a.k.a. Michael Waterman, and I will be doing analyzing Sword and Sandal films every month, and you have been warned. So there you go.
I'm so
if you like hanging out with us.
This will be the second Tuesday of every month from 8 to 8:30 p.m.
Okay, and so now you know, folks. And we love you a lot, don't we, Setna?
Absolutely. And it's always a pleasure. And I'm so grateful that Hercules allowed my beautiful friend Diana to be that we could be co-hosts tonight.
Well, thank you. And I'm so grateful that he allowed my beautiful friend Setna, a.k.a. Michael Waterman, to be my co-host. So we will see you next time, second Tuesday of the month. And if you like Sword and Sandal movies, come to us. We'll tell you all about them.
Thank you so very much. You guys are awesome, and I'm looking forward to all your future shows together. Wow, I'm very impressed. And thanks to our wonderful audience for tuning in. Whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called and you're patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand, until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thank you, Diana, and thank you, Sedna.
Bless you, and thank you all.
Bye.
Good night.